All right, now welcome to Crow 777 Radio. This is hour one of episode 653. Jason Lingren is with me and Billy Bonds joins us for the first time. We're going to be talking about a hurricane, specifically Helene. I assume that's how it's said because there's an E on the end of it with one L. Makes landfall 26 October 2024. They're claiming that the winds approached 140, or actually they're claiming sustained winds of 140 miles per hour. And on Wikipedia, they are claiming 252 deaths, which I think all the locals are disputing. I just asked Billy that because I had heard people disputing it. Anyhow, welcome, Jason.
And a warm and sunny good morning.
Did you guys get any of the edge weather off of this back in October of 24, Jason?
No, we were fine.
Yeah. So welcome, Billy.
Well, it's a joy to be here with y'all. Thank you so much for having me.
It's good to have you here. We had to cancel recording, unfortunately, a couple times, but we're doing it now. Why don't you lay down websites, contacts, anything you'd like to get up front here?
Sure. Right now, if anybody wants to find me, you can find us on YouTube at Perma Pastures Farm. Pastures as in plural. Perma Pastures Farm on YouTube, pretty much on X and all the... I'm just starting to get a footprint on X. And then our website, what's at permapasturesfarm.com. And then some other places, because I think if we get into solutions, some of the things that we're coming up with is sovereignhealthsummit.com. Maybe we can get into that a little bit in terms of solutions to some of the problems we have going on around here. And then we also have a, it's a give, send, go, but we're not really asking for money because we have all the money we need right now to clean up Western North Carolina, and that's through our foundation, which is Living Soil Foundation. So I'm not really asking for donations anymore. We have more than what we need, and we are doing unbelievable amounts of good through that foundation. So yeah, just a real joy to be here with you.
All right. So let's make sure Rose has all those links, and we'll get them posted when we go live here. But just to start off here, we're not going to per se go at how the hurricanes are forming if they're being steered. And let's be frank here. If you do any research, it looks almost obvious that a hurricane could be dissolved with very simple methods, what I have seen recently. But those are not the things we're going to be touching on. So, Billy, can you describe what happened during the hurricane in West North Carolina and how it affected the land and the water? Because that's really what we're going to touch on here.
Well, I know you don't want to necessarily get into the what fors and how and why, but it's almost going to be necessary at a certain point, but I won't focus entirely on that.
Let me retract. If you want to go down that avenue, then do it by all means.
Sure, because it's kind of critical to explain what happened. Well, days before the hurricane was supposed to arrive, already there was something a little bit amiss around here. There was a guy on YouTube, he's like a weatherman. I don't recall his name. He was on there crying, talking about how, look, if you live in Western North Carolina, and the guy just broke down crying. He's a guy that's from Louisiana. I don't recall his name. I'm sure it'll come to me in a minute. But anyway, I'm already thinking, my wife just kind of, being farmers, we watch the weather. So she, Weatherman Plus, that's the name of the guy. And it didn't make any sense because we're like, okay, we're so far inland. I don't understand it. And he's like, for some reason, it was bizarre. So then as the hurricane approaches, it's still down in near Florida at the time. And all of a sudden, days before, we get massive, massive spraying in the sky. And then downtown Asheville all of a sudden was flooded. And then where we live, which is about 45 minutes north of Asheville, North Carolina, we were getting flooded days before. And I'm like, this is freaking bizarre because we got these unbelievable winds coming through. We have what they call Biltmore Village, which is near the Biltmore Hotel, and it's absolutely underwater like a couple of days before. And I'm like, man, how did they get this so wrong? They just said it was down in the Gulf. So I didn't think much about it. And the area was absolutely saturated. And then lo and behold, here it is. The hurricane's coming our way.
Was there rain or did the water show up free of rain?
No, it was rain. It was rain, massive winds. And all of automatically, I'm assuming that they just got it all wrong and that the hurricane just got here 2 days prior to what they forecasted. But it was being set up. I mean, they were already saturating the ground before that manufactured hurricane is what everybody around here that has any sense. That's what we call it. It gets here. The day of the hurricane, it was not even, at least where I live, it was nowhere near as bad as it was 2 days prior. Now, as the hurricane comes and goes, we're seeing giant oaks just on my property. Because I am a permaculture designer, we plan for 500-year events. So we were completely fine. In fact, we only lost a single tree. What I didn't know is that 360 degrees around us, where I live in Mars Hill, North Carolina, everything was wrecked. I mean, absolutely everything was wrecked. And I can only claim that not only was it good design on our property, but also I think the good Lord was looking after us. So anyway, hurricane comes, it leaves, we still got power, everything's relatively normal. There's some trees down in the street, but I live in a really rural environment, so that isn't unusual. So then the chainsaw brigade of all the people around here get out there, we clear the roads, everything seemed fine. 2 hours later, all of a sudden, the power goes off, but the internet is still on. Now, I'm almost a 30-year journeyman electrician, IBEW trained, so I know how power works. Now, the power lines sit above your communication lines on the poles. So all of a sudden, when the power went off, but the internet was, I mean, it just made no sense, because if something had fallen, it would hit all of it. I'm sorry, the internet went out, but the power was still on. And I'm like, this makes no sense. How would something hit a communication line that was below the power lines? It would have had to have severed all of it, not just part of it. And then a couple of more hours go by, now the power's down. So now I'm thinking, okay, well, we're set up for that sort of thing out here. We have multiple means of power generation. But obviously, we have no communication at that point. We have no way to know what exactly happened. And where I'm standing, I'm like, well, that was a big nothing burger. So then we go out, help the chainsaw crews, or at least try to. By that time, the roads are absolutely clear, at least where I live. And then all of a sudden, we said, huh, maybe we ought to load up the chainsaws, go to town, and go see what's up. Now, that's where all of a sudden we're starting to get a better view of what had happened. We go to the local farm store, which is kind of the town where the town criers hang out in these little towns. So we get over there, and then we're hearing all of these prognostications of doom coming from all of these different folks that are hanging out there, but you're not really entirely sure what you can or can't believe. So we're finding out that everybody's saying, wow, the bridge in the next town over is completely gone. Asheville's a complete mess. We're hearing all of this stuff. So I'm not sure what to believe. We go back home and then everything's cool. Well, it's the very next day. And now, I kid you not, all of the radio stations that were still functioning, still have no cell phone, but of course we can catch the radio. Not one radio station, not NPR, not any of them, for 3 solid days had zero reporting on what exactly had unfolded, which I found absolutely bizarre, because I'm hearing all of these croakings of doom down at the farm store. But meanwhile, nobody in any radio station for 3 solid days is recording or at least giving you a play-by-play what happened. So we said, okay, let's drive into Asheville. Automatically, when I get on the interstate heading south towards Asheville, I'm thinking, okay, something is definitely wrong here. I'm seeing devastation that I've been through a number of disasters. I've seen war zones. I've seen a lot of this stuff. But it looked literally, when we got closer to Asheville, as if Godzilla had walked all over everything. We get over there, and alongside the interstate, anything near that river was completely underwater. And then as we go a little bit further, get into Asheville, we're realizing, okay, this is a serious catastrophe. We stop by, and the most annoying thing that happened during all of this is people parked out on the bridges, the overpasses, through the rivers that go through here. And they're literally laughing, pointing, watching buildings float down the river, and probably humans along with it, almost certainly. And so we're like, okay, this is not a place to be. So now we realize this thing is a real big disaster. 2 more days go by, and then all of a sudden, NPR and the rest of them decide to start reporting what's happening. And I guess I can leave it right there for now. But yeah, it was a total mess.
Well, you point out one thing that just jumps out to me. Even though we'll probably touch on how these hurricanes come to be and whether they're steered, is the total control of communication. So what they did is they prevented any man on the street video, right? That's basically what you're communicating. So anyone who was there filming, like before TikTok got taken over, what we were seeing in the LA fires, that went away. And the most recent example, there's a guy over in where the country just got taken down. And this morning he put up a video saying the coverage that made him famous, millions of views, is gone. I looked at it in America. it's still posted. The point I'm making is you experience the power of the control they have over communication.
I'll do one better, Crow. Check this out. You got two major arteries that leave in and out of Asheville. One is I-40, it goes east and west, and then you have I-26, which goes north and south. I-40 each way was absolutely gone. I-26, absolutely gone going out of the north. The only area you could get in or out of Asheville for the longest time was going south out of I-26. So if I were being a former U.S. Army sapper, it was almost like a military operation, because the first thing we do when you want to put something under siege is you blow the bridges getting in and out of that place. And I was like, at that point, I wasn't quite putting everything together. Not then. I was like, this is so flipping bizarre, because all of these bridges are engineered for such things. How on earth did this happen? You only have one way in and out of Asheville, and it's not the best way. It's basically coming in and out of the south. And even then, it was touch and go. It's not even good on a good day, but without there being a storm. So automatically, I'm thinking, okay, since I'm an avid listener of your program, I'm automatically asking critical questions. I'm already asking, something doesn't seem right here, but still, it's still not all making sense. But I should say that, well, I don't know if you want to get into it yet, but right now, at that point, there are people in a very, very, very bad way. We're surrounded by water, but you can't drink any of it unless you're prepared, unless you got iodine tablets, unless you're boiling it. There was no power in most of the place. It was as if it was like Baghdad all over again, where you cut off any communication, where you cut off any means of travel. I'm like, man, if this were a military operation, which I wasn't thinking that way at first, if this were a military operation, boy, you couldn't do it any better.
How were the so two interstates were interrupted and this wasn't reported? Back in the day, if an interstate, just to put context, like if a bad winter storm or something messed up an interstate, that was all over the news, if for no other reason because of the truckers. But was it the bridges? You said I-10 and I-40?
I-26 and I-40 both ways. I-40 both ways was gone. And I-26 north, when you get up by the border into Tennessee, it was gone as well.
By bridges or by damage to the actual street?
No, bridges. Everywhere where it had a major, where it was the Nolichucky River, which is one of the main arteries around here, or the French Broad River, anywhere those places touched a bridge, for the most part, most of those bridges were gone. And the curious thing is, well, with I-40 going out to the west, it was in a different place. But it was almost as if, I mean, if you wanted to basically put a place under siege, I just don't understand how you could do it any better.
So you're starting to notice at this point that it looks like a military siege. The arteries in on major interstates have been broken. Things are destroyed. They're bringing down the internet, but not the power. The radio stations are not reporting on what's going on, and you're seeing devastation. What were the first signs that you saw as you're starting to put this together that something more than devastation had happened?
Sure. Well, I started thinking back about 3 days in, all of a sudden they start telling you about the radio stations. All of a sudden, after three flipping days where people are dying, all of a sudden the radio stations all seem to come alive. And NPR, all of a sudden, they're patting themselves on the back. When I started to smell a rat, immediately was going this long without any reporting whatsoever. Like you said, if there, and knowing the same thing, if there's ice on the road, you know about it. You're telling me entire thoroughfares are gone, main thoroughfares are gone, and they're not telling us about this for 3 days. In fact, the reason I knew I-40 was down, because I had, of course, being in the preparedness, permaculture, practical living, the whole nine yards, we had actually driven up I-26. The only reason I knew they were out, long before the radio stations talked about it, we had driven up I-26, and then we got turned around by highway patrolmen. We drove down into Asheville, took I-40, under the bridge, and then we got out, I'd say maybe 15 miles, maybe not even that far, and then they're turning us around there. And then we go the other way, and then we find out the same thing. So I found out about this. The only way I found out about it was actually going out there and driving these roads myself. And it was a complete mess. I couldn't believe how something could be this devastated and nobody say anything about it. So all of a sudden, I start there's no way we can make phone calls. And that was at least for a solid week. You know, we could make no phone calls. So the only information you had was from one person to the other. And there were people losing their minds. I mean, everybody waiting at, there were pockets of places in outlying cities, and one, mine is one of them, where there might have been an ATM. You'd see it 100 deep, people trying to get cash out. And then you would see, and people would just exchange information among ourselves. But outside of that, it was not being disseminated, not through any radio station. And they were broadcasting. So that's the thing. They were going on about regular everyday broadcasting, but of course it wasn't. I was like, man, am I living in an alternate reality? Because how on earth do you have this unfolding and nobody saying anything?
Did you see any emergency personnel? Did you see state police, local police, fire? Did you see FEMA? Did you see National Guard? Did you see anybody?
Nobody, except in the places where we got turned around on the interstate. And then on the bridges, there were a few police officers, Asheville's finest, telling people get off the bridge, because they were, if there were any emergency vehicles out and about, I didn't see any, except for the police officers that were at the checkpoints that were turning people around on the main thoroughfares. Outside of that, I didn't see anything. And in my town of Mars Hill, already people were in a bad way. It makes you realize, it made me realize how awful a disaster this was going to be if we didn't hurry up and get fuel and water into this place immediately. And in some of the outlying areas, because I live not far off the interstate, I knew immediately if we don't help these people in the far rural places, we're going to have a major, major problem.
Well, it just occurred to me, they bring down the phone. There's no 911 calls. That's bad enough on its own. But every time there's a 911 call, that goes on a record. So that record is non-existent.
Yeah, there was a whole lot of crazy things that went on. And then all of a sudden, see, I should point out this because it's kind of critical. I had never seen, now we are being sprayed every single day from this garbage that they dump from the sky. I had never seen it so bad as the days prior to this hurricane. Now, as I compared notes with Dane Wigington, who just happens to be a friend of mine, and a number of other people that are in that space, the prevailing theory at that time is that they dropped these, let's call them particles, because we don't really know for sure what they were. We do know there's were large amounts of barium, strontium, and the other things because of our subsequent testing. But they dropped this stuff in the sky, and then the prevailing theory is, and we saw it also happen with Hurricane Harvey and a number of other events, that maybe, just possibly, that they're using these NEXRAD radar towers, because you can even see the data right now from Dane Wigington's site and several others as well, that all of a sudden, we have this hurricane. Think about this. It does not increase in strength as it goes across land. It is a natural impossibility. But somehow jumped over everything from the Gulf, came all the way up to Western North Carolina, decided to strengthen itself, and it dropped the equivalent of all the water that goes over Niagara Falls in 2 years. It dropped that in about 2 hours.
God.
So it was absolutely devastating what it did. And their death counts are absolutely absurd.
They're claiming 252 on Wikipedia, but I'm sure you must be aware of all the people who now have the radar data that shows nationwide pulses or regional-wide pulses, as almost every modern hurricane that's been recently has shown this. Jason, didn't we cover mist machines or something like that in Houston, if I remember?
Yeah, we went over a bunch of this stuff. By the way, at this point, how much is the mainstream media saying about it, and how false might it be?
Well, it's curious you asked that question, because truthfully, we knew the reporting was lying from when they did decide to start reporting. We knew that everything they were saying, and I mean everything, I would give them a bone if I possibly could, but we knew immediately that everything being reported was a lie, because I'm boots on the ground. I can see it. I've been out and about. I've been going out and about as often as I could to help anybody I thought might need help. So we knew that it was a lie. And it was a manufactured lie from the word go. And to this day, I have a footprint in the permaculture circles. I'm sought after to speak at conferences and stuff like that. Well, I spoke at a conference, I'd say 6 months after. It's a local conference. And I just simply won't name it unless you want to make them famous for what not to go to. I was in this conference, local. It was basically an organic growers conference. And I'm in there talking to the local people there, giving them the information, or trying to, everything I'm telling you right now, because these people lived it too. And under no circumstances would they allow themselves to see. I mean, it basically, in a nutshell, no amount of evidence can shatter a faith consciously based on a lie. And these people were already so saturated with the lies that they were told, they were no longer using their own critical judgment to ask critical questions about the things that they were told. So I'm almost literally hooted and pelted on this stage as I'm explaining to these people the very things I'm talking to you about. And I will say that the majority of these crowds were basically from the left tradition, and I don't subscribe to either side. It's not red state or blue state. I just need to point this out. It's not red state or blue state to me. It's just the state against you. So these people were highly invested into the mainstream narrative, which was, you know, climate change caused it. It's just happened. And bottom line is you don't break a flood record. Typically, you might break it by a foot or two, you know, 100-year flood. You don't break it by 20 feet. That doesn't happen. And so not through nature, it doesn't. So we got this hurricane. It came up here, parked itself, stayed still, just like it did at Hurricane Harvey, dumps all this water and a bunch of nanoparticulates, which we're still dealing with in to some extreme or another, to some extent or another. But the people are just unwilling. Some of them, and when I say some, I would say maybe if I were to give you a percentage of the people I've interacted with, I would say maybe 2% of the populace believes that it was something other than a natural phenomenon.
So it's not just the devastation. It's not just that the entire thing looks like it was orchestrated. Everything is damaged. Things are destroyed in a way you said it looked like Godzilla walked through there, but there's a bigger problem, isn't there? The whole place ends up being contaminated. When did you begin to realize the scope of the contamination problem?
Well, okay. So that unfolds in a couple of different ways. It might have been, about 2 weeks later that all of a sudden I'm driving alongside the river. Now, these are data points. Man, I kick myself to this day that I did not get footage of it. Is that all of a sudden the waters had receded by then, and now you can see the full extent of the damage. But in all of the businesses alongside the river, I'm seeing armies. I mean, absolute armies of, I would say, undocumented workers that were working alongside this. Now, automatically, the bell started going off.
Wait a minute. So you're seeing undocumented people. Is that unusual for your area?
Highly unusual. There's very low population of undocumented workers near this part of Asheville. And a very low number of, I'd say, all people of color that live in this area. They're very, very few. I'm unusual in that regard.
Where did they look like they're from? Is this like Latin America, you know, Central South America and Mexico? Or what did they look? Where did they look like they came from?
Yeah, that was where they all came from. And not one of them spoke a word of English because I interacted with them or tried to. I'm down by the river and I'm driving down closer and I see all of them in Tyvek uniforms, no masks, no nothing. I got the windows rolled up in my truck and you're being choked by whatever's in the air. We had no idea what it could have been at that point. And these people are out there in Tyvek suits, no respirators, no nothing. Here's why this stuck out to me, Crow. Here's why that was a big data point. Number one, there aren't a lot of undocumented people around here, number one. And when you do see them, the only place you'll see them, for the most part, outside of doing roofing work and contractor work here and there, the only time you ever see them is when they are spraying the power lines. They don't care if those people die because they're undocumented, okay?
What do you mean by spraying the power lines?
So wherever you have power lines, they have to keep those clear of any kind of debris, any kind of anything. You'll see 100% of the time, I don't care what state you live in. Go out and check if you doubt me. Wherever you see a power line, you'll see them periodically spray this stuff with that Monsanto stuff. I can't think of the name of it right now.
Roundup?
Roundup, exactly. That's exactly the word I'm looking for. So they'll be spraying Roundup 100% of the time. Take a look who it is. I guarantee it. If you see it in any state, I will bet any amount of money that it is an undocumented person doing that because they don't care if they die because they're undocumented. So when I saw an army of them down by this river and you're being choked because you can't even breathe, I automatically knew, hold on a minute. Where did they get all these people? So I get out of the truck. And I'm thinking, okay, I know this isn't good for me, but I'm going to find out what's going on. Every single one of them I went to, there wasn't a single one of them that spoke a word of English, not one. And I'm like, okay, this is curious. So then all of a sudden, I go to another place that's closer to Asheville. I keep stopping off, and all I see are undocumented. And when I say armies, I'm talking armies of them that are out by this river doing whatever cleanup was out there. There was not a single one of them that spoke even broken English that I could somehow work out.
What are they doing, though? They're in Tyvek suits. What do you mean cleanup? What is it that they're physically doing?
Yeah, they're physically cleaning up the buildings. Now, the water had receded at this point. They're in there taking the muck, the mud, and all this other stuff that were in these buildings that were still standing, and they're putting it in dumpsters, and then they're putting it in giant piles. That was what they were, that was the big part of what they were doing. Some of the ladies that were out there might have been out cleaning up some of the debris that was on the trees that were still there, but they were all working alongside that river. And I'm like, okay, something stinks to high heaven. And it wasn't just that river. So that's what literally clued me in right off. That was my first data point. And then later on, there's a community further down near the Marshall area. And old folks are complaining that they have all these respiratory problems. And then that's data number two. Now, here's the big one. In the town of Marshall, which flanks the river, flanks the French Broad River, the water covered nearly every building there. But they had put up, I mean, these people had the best intentions in mind. All of a sudden, the people of that town had created a little zone that was higher up in the mountains. And so what they would do is they would take people, put them in Tyvek suits, green rubber boots. That's going to be important here in a moment. Green rubber boots, and they would give them respirators. And so we went down there thinking, okay, what can I do to help? And because I have a pretty popular YouTube channel regarding permaculture, preparedness, and practical living, I'm thinking, okay, man, is there anything I can do to put attention on this thing? So we went there. And I knew some of the people that were running what they called their decontamination station. I get over there and I'm asking them, hey, what's going on? They're saying, man, we got a lot of people that are coming back, even wearing these N19 masks. They're coming back, they're complaining about respiratory issues, their boots that are, I'm sorry, black. They were black boots. They're coming back green. And I'm like, hold on a minute. What on earth is going on here? And so by this point, we have volunteers from all over the world that were in here that were helping in the Marshall. So they were doing exactly what the same thing that the illegal folks were doing further upstream. But now, because this is a town, and you do have a volunteerist mindset in this whole area in the mountains, you do have that. And so people were coming far and wide to work in this place. I can't even tell you. I mean, we were getting reports of people that had their dogs down there, drank from the river, they're dead. One lady had a flock of 30 goats, 15 of them drank from the river, they're dead. And now all of these people have respiratory issues, skin irritations, all these other things, and black boots are coming back green. So I'm thinking, okay, I have got, at this point, I knew 100% with those three data points, I knew something stinked to high heaven. Meanwhile, the governor comes out here and he's telling everybody, it's all clear, y'all. Everything's fine. Everything's cool. Being a politician, I'm already suspicious in the first place. But now with the data that I have, I know something stinks. So now the next thing is, who do I reach out for testing?
So you get samples, I'm assuming. And by the way, did you get water, plant, soil? What kinds of samples did you get?
Okay. Well, let me tell you how difficult that was. First of all, I didn't know who to go to. I'm a soil scientist to a certain extent. I've been trained under Dr. Elaine Ingham, but this was so far out of my depth. And I'm thinking, okay, who? And I'm praying to the good Lord, like, please, who do I even go to? Everybody I reached out to had worked at the behest of the state and local governments. So I'm thinking, okay, I don't think I'm going to get an honest answer from these people. So I reached out to Dane Wigington, knowing that he had done some testing from, you know, he's paid pilots to go up there and capture some of the stuff being dumped out of these planes. So I'm thinking he might know. Dane's a friend of mine. So Dane was looking high and low and he couldn't even get back to me. So all of a sudden, friends out in Kansas, I made overtures on YouTube that we were looking for somebody, but if you had any affiliation with the government, I didn't want to go to step two. So friends out in Kansas reach out to me and tell me about a guy named Dr. Will Spencer. Never heard of him before at that time. And then they also tell me that he works with a guy named Pat Miletich. Now, he I had heard of because he's a former UFC world champion. What I didn't know is that he had become a soil scientist. So I reach out to Dr. Will Spencer and he reaches back. And so he's on his way here because he's telling me that from the satellite data, now what he specializes in, there's a lot of things that he does, but one of which is that he uses satellite data to figure out what the contamination of an area is, and he uses scalar testing. I had never really heard, I'd heard a little bit about scalar technology before, but I didn't know a whole lot about it. So he was the first one that I met with when we got on the ground.
Are you working from the assumption that what came out of the planes that were so heavily bombarding is part of the problem?
Exactly. So we didn't know for sure whether it was just the planes, or we had come to find out later on, my wife is something of an internet sleuth, come to find out that there were Superfund sites that were buried after World War I because the mustard gas that was being manufactured during World War I had been dumped in places alongside the river. Well, nobody was talking about the fact that some of these places upstream were uncovered during this flood. And all these Superfund sites, which of course the government isn't telling anybody about, all of a sudden these things were compromised to the extent to this day we still don't know. But we didn't know whether it was carrot or the horse. We didn't know where it was coming from. So, but we did know that record numbers, record amounts of barium, aluminum, strontium, at least had been dumped from the sky. So I'm like, okay, first thing we got to do, because now everybody's talking remediation around this, but I'm like, how do you remediate something that you don't know what the problem is? So Dr. Will gets here. I meet him down by the river. Now, simultaneously, we have Bear Independent, who is over on the Tennessee side getting samples. He's doing independent testing, and I didn't know it at the time, but at the same time we were getting testing, he was getting it done. He was doing lab testing, and he had found a reliable lab. Now, Dr. Will hits the ground, and I meet him over in the place where I told you where all the senior citizens were having a hard time breathing. This is 3 weeks later, and it's still difficult to breathe around there. So we have Dr. Will do his scalar testing, and not being entirely sure about how good this stuff was, I said, okay, we're going to do lab testing as well. So at about the same time I met Dr. Will, I didn't know it, but all of a sudden there were these environmental engineers who were on the east side of North Carolina running some of the freedom groups that I run in. And I'm thinking, okay, this is getting better. So let me get them out here. But Dr. Will's on the ground first. His scalar testing only takes maybe 30 minutes for him to run the test. He ran the soil in multiple places alongside this river, ran the soil, did the water in the river, and did it in a number of different places. And I recorded him. Now, I had just gotten a footprint on X at that point, and hopefully the video is still there. I took this video that I recorded of him, and I quote, he says, "I don't know 100% for sure, but this place rivals Chernobyl." And I'm like, oh my goodness. Okay. And then he's telling me there's radiation out here. There's every so-called forever chemical out here. There's every awful thing you could think of out here. So I put it on X, and immediately I can't podcast from X. I can't do anything from X. I mean, it was like they shut that thing down. I put it on YouTube, and it went far and wide. Okay, so now, a week later, the environmental scientists show up who are going to do lab testing. Now, keep in mind, at this point, I'm still kind of so-so about this scalar testing. I didn't know what to think of it. They do their testing, and then 2 weeks after that testing, confirmed point per point everything Dr. Will had told me with his scalar testing. In fact, he might have been a little bit subdued. Now, keep in mind, this is 2 weeks after he did his test, or a week after, and then we had results 2 weeks later. So 3 weeks later, we get the results from Dr. Will's initial test. And not only does it confirm that there's radiation, there's everything out there in this water. At the same time, a local NGO called Mountain True is telling everybody, yeah, the soil samples were a little bit high on a couple of things, but no, they're categorically lying on everything. The state, the local, everybody is lying about the toxicity of this river. Meanwhile, they got people, volunteers, everybody down here working by this river, and it is getting crazier. Okay, so Dr. Will and I, now that I know his testing is legit, I'm like, okay, let me talk to this guy and talk about remediation strategies. And I'm reaching out to a number of others as well. Check this out. Here's where it gets even crazier. And I can't tell you, I can tell you privately, but I can't do it publicly. Down the river, there's a place where all of these rivers converge, and it's called Douglas Lake. So So you have the Nolichucky River, you have the French Broad River, and there's one other main river. They all basically dump into Lake Douglas. Down by there, I can't tell you the location because, and I'll get to that story here in a minute. Dr. Will says, hey, man, there's these firemen that reached out to me after your video and all the stuff you were talking about. These firemen reached out to me and they're having a bad way. They're jumping into the river. And he tells me the story. So I'm like, okay, I got to confirm this. So I'm going to go to this firehouse and we meet them on a Sunday. And by this time, it's in the dead of winter. We meet these firemen and it was strange. We go in there and these guys, there's one of them that knows who I am and is an avid listener and watcher of my podcast and YouTube channel. We get inside there and like a sudden hush comes over all of these guys. And you could tell there was like this look of fear on their faces. And I couldn't figure out why. So they kind of huddle up. And then one of them comes back and says, hey, man, I'm sorry you've come all this way. But man, we can't have you record our voices and we can't have you record our faces.
Firemen?
Firemen.
Why? Did they tell you why?
Oh, yeah. They told me that right after this hurricane, all of a sudden, there was one of them that was an Air Force veteran. He said sniffer planes immediately. Now, let's go back to the hurricane. They said sniffer planes were flying over this area around Lake Douglas, and they were making racetracks back and forth across the sky. All of a sudden, and numerous people saw them, these helicopters with no markings come in, and people in white moon suits is all they could describe it by, had gotten off these helicopters. What they picked up, nobody could tell. But they could see that the guys were out there. They got on the ground, apparently picked up whatever it was, and then they flew away. Now, these guys, these firemen, they go to a call near Douglas Lake. They find a vehicle that's upside down where the rivers converge into the lake. Well, being first responders, they go in there. They're wearing all of their protective gear. And through their suits, they are burned beyond belief.
My God.
They go to the hospital. The hospital, they go to the local hospital there, and this is coming directly from the firemen. They go to the hospital, and they're telling them all they give them is anti-anxiety medication. They don't even treat their wounds. And they're telling these guys, well, it's probably psychosomatic, just don't worry about it. That's when they reached out to Dr. Will. They're like, man, do you have any kind of protocol? Well, Dr. Will, on his own dime, kind of told me a lot about his character, drove all the way from where he was out here to treat these firemen. So then I get in there and I'm like, guys, why can't I record you? And they said, look, man, you're going to think we're crazy. You're going to absolutely think we're crazy, but I'm going to tell you, but this is why you can't. And I had to go back and forth with them three or four times before they ever agreed to tell me what was going on. They said, we're being followed by black SUVs everywhere we go, whether it's dropping our kids off at school, whether we go to the grocery store. There's like, man, all of our wives are freaking out right now. Look, man. And I'm like, dude, this is going to keep happening. So I tried to talk them into it. There was no words I could say that would put them at ease enough. So I said, well, will you be okay? Would it be okay if you told me the story of what's going on? And I won't tell anybody the location. I will not tell you. I will not say anything about. And they're like, yeah, we're okay with that. So Dr. Will treats all these guys and they are scared to death. They're like, dude, this is something right out of a movie.
What are they treated for?
Well, Dr. Will treated them for burns and exposure to a bunch of different toxins. And he's a naturopath. So everybody that took his protocol, this you might find this interesting. Everybody that took his protocol, and he brought an entire trailer of his protocol. Everybody that took his protocol is alive today. All the ones that didn't, dead.
Do you know what the protocol was?
Dr. Will's protocol? Yeah. You can find it if you were to go to my website. They're Cell Saviors, C-E-L-L Saviors. That's the product he used. And he gave me a bunch of it to use because I was working in such close proximity to this stuff. Basically, his product chelates a lot of this junk out of you. And so I've been using it from that day since. And also when I found out, because I was still like, you know, I've been burned so many times, man. I was like, I don't know if this is going to work. So, you know what? It ain't going to hurt. So it consists, as I understand it, of some probiotics. Extremophiles are really what they are, along with some fulvic acid and the initial protocol requires you to use some methylene blue. So you use the methylene blue for about 30 days and you work your way up in the amount that you use in this protocol. So he was giving this stuff away to these guys for free. And all of them survived. Now, what if I told you, okay, it was a month later after this, after I went out there, there were 30 people, none of them jabbed, because that was my first question, that were dead, that were in close proximity of that community. And these are not big communities. 30 people dead for unknown reasons, and none of them were jabbed to this day. Now, here we are a year on. Dr. Will tells me that there's been anywhere between 300 to 500 dead within this community around that lake that they never told anybody was toxic. 300 to 500 people, he can't even keep up with it at this point, that are dropping like flies left and right all around that place.
I don't even know where to start. I mean, my mind is just kind of blown here. It's pretty clear someone wants that place empty, or there's something there someone wants. But when they did the scalar testing, you confirmed what you suspected to find. Is this correct? Barium, strontium, aluminum, the things that are typically associated with chem planes?
Absolutely. All of those things, the barium, strontium, aluminum, all of it was confirmed in levels that were so high, because the first thing I did when I got the test results, not being a person, I know how to read a lab report when it comes to certain things, but not these types of things. So first thing I did was call Dane Wigington. And I'm like, Dane, what do these results mean? I sent them all to him. And his jaw dropped. He's like, dude, this is not only what they dropped from the sky in amounts that I've never seen before, but there's clearly something upstream that compromised it even more. So every awful thing you can think of was not only in that river and is in that river to this day, but it was also on all of the land on either side of that river.
Did you confirm through the scalar testing, were there other things that were found that are toxic?
Oh, yeah. Some sort of nuclear whatever. But I'll be honest with you, it's beyond my skill. I have all the results and everything.
You're saying it's radioactive as well?
It was at the time. And we went out there with Geiger counters. And Geiger counters only work within a specific band. But there are other things that could be out there that the Geiger counters aren't going to pick up. So the scalar testing picked it up. And also the lab testing picked it up. Now, here's where it gets even crazier. On the lab testing, we couldn't even put what the location was on the lab, because we had to use multiple labs. Any place where foolishly my engineer, which I told him not to do, anywhere where he put the location that it was along the French Broad River, we got low results. When he put ambiguous testing locations, all of a sudden we got the truth. So it was like all these labs had been told, look, if it comes anywhere from around here, you better come up with some. It showed a little bit of elevation, but everywhere we put anonymous sources, we got the real stuff. And it confirmed the scalar testing, and everything was off the charts.
So does it appear like there were more? So one delivery method that's suspected is the planes, but you're also stating that it was coming down a waterway. So is it suspected that a pond or a lake or something upstream had also been contaminated?
Oh, shoot. Yeah, a number of them. In fact, there was one that we knew was a likely source of contamination, and it's a PVC plant where they make PVC pipe. And it was like from the Marshall community, I would say maybe 3 miles upriver. We knew that that had been compromised. And of course, we tried to get out there. A number of others did as well, to try to look at the MSDS, or the material safety data sheets, from that plant, which by law they are required to have. Of course, they were stonewalling anybody that tried to get in that place. And to this day, to my understanding, I don't know that anybody's ever looked at it. So that plant was flooded. And what went down the river from that plant, we don't know. But there was a number of things that we know are confirmed from what they dropped from the sky. And we also suspect that it could have been the Superfund site upstream, but more than likely, and I can't 100% confirm this, but more than likely, it was part of the mixture in which they dropped from the sky to entangle this storm with the particles they were dropping to steer this thing the way it was. Because honestly, Dr. Will told me when I first talked to him, when he hit the ground, he says, you know, normally I can get a real good feel for the bottom of a location just by satellite data. He said, this whole region shows to be polluted. He said, I thought our machinery was malfunctioning. That's the whole reason I came boots on the ground here, because I didn't believe. So he literally drove to location, hours away from one another, and this whole region was contaminated. That's why we're saying that it couldn't just be what was alongside that river. It had to be whatever they were dumping out of these planes, because there are locations that are equally as contaminated that were miles away from these rivers. So the only conclusion you can draw is that it had to come from these planes and whatever they were dropping.
So is that where the radioactivity was coming from?
Yes, all of it. It was coming from every alongside. It was higher concentration alongside the river, but the entire region, I'm talking all of Western North Carolina, where that storm was, and Tennessee. So it wasn't just the rivers. It was everything all throughout this place. It's a mess, and it was a mess, and it still is a mess. And the good thing is that we've come up with protocols to heal this land.
So let me jump in here, Billy, and wrap up a couple things. We're coming up on the hour, and we are going to talk about solutions that Billy knows works, firsthand, proven works. But was this whole area farming area? Was farming typical in this area?
Yes and no. See, when you deal with not farming in the typical way that people understand it, when people think of farming, they typically think of a guy on a tractor, a gal on a tractor, and they're working out in fields. You have farms all over these mountains. You have a food culture prior to this event, and I would say it was even better prior to COVID. You can't go to a restaurant in Nashville where you don't see a list of, I mean, they brag about all the farmers that they get their food from. So yes, I mean, farming, not in the typical way. Mountain farming is a whole lot different than commodity farming that you see in the Midwest. So you'll have pockets of farms here and there and here. You have food forests situated over here. You have an orchard situated over there. It was a beautiful symbiosis between the restaurants, the local community, the farmers. It's farming done in a very, very different way. But yes, indeed, it's farming done because you had some of the richest land around here in so many different ways, because typically in mountains, you don't necessarily have the richest soil in the world. The higher you go in altitude, the less your fertility. The lower you go, the higher the fertility. There's a whole bunch of reasons for that, but that's generally how you can look at it. But this place was very special. You're still high altitude, but at the same time, you still had farm after farm, little micro farms. I mean, a person that's growing, let's say, microgreens in a closet or in a spare room in their home, they would be at the farmer's market, a guy growing mushrooms. And you had this beautiful symbiosis when it came to food. And it was part of what attracted me to this area. But yeah, that's by and large, it's long gone.
It sounds like these were the kind of little outposts that could survive if everything shut down around them.
Yes and no, because so many of these people, unlike us, we farm in a very, very different kind of way. Number one, we farm, first of all, to supply our own needs. We supply all of our meat here, most of our veggies, and we basically go to the store for toilet paper and aluminum foil. I mean, I'm oversimplifying it, but I think you get the point. These other people farm in a very different way. They farm because they were making their living off. There was a beautiful symbiosis that happened with the local restaurants around here because they would source most of what they got from these local people. Now, all of a sudden you had no supply and you had no building to supply it to. So these farmers were in a bad way, and a lot of them are still in a bad way. And considering what's just unfolded just recently, I mean, it's not improving for a lot of these folks. So the first campaign that we did, and I thought it was a good one, there was a local lady who runs a farm store. She said, look, these farmers can't sell their stuff to restaurants that don't exist. So let's do a GoFundMe or whatever to pay these farmers to supply the rescue workers and everybody else. So I was like, wow, great idea. So I raised about $250,000 for these people using my YouTube platform and whatever else. We raised about $250,000 for these people to get these farmers rocking and rolling until maybe the FEMA money came in, which didn't, or all of the other money that should have come in and didn't. So now these guys and gals that are farming, hacking it out of the wilderness, I mean, have the best of hearts while doing this stuff. Now it's getting to the point where it's touch and go as to whether or not they can even maintain themselves here.
We're coming up on the top of the hour. And just quickly, what are the conclusions that you can draw? And lay it down pretty briefly here, Billy. We're going to come back in hour two and we're going to close out on this. But we're also going to talk about that after the discovery and testing, the remediation strategies. So it looks like it was intentionally executed.
I absolutely concur. There is no doubt in my mind no doubt in my mind, this thing was done purposefully. Now, are there certain interests that want this land? I suspect there is. I can't 100% prove it, but there's a lot of smoke to that fire. At the end of the day, it seems like it was an engineered event. And there's probably, like every other engineered event, it's multifaceted. I'm sure there was a number of reasons why they wanted to get it done. And at the end of the day, things are not looking good around here in terms of business, in terms of people staying in business.
There's been no help. There's been precious little of anything. I mean, not even reporting on the contaminated nature. No help has come. I mean, it's basically this happened. It was not announced and it still remains in that condition.
There's places I could take you right now if you were to roll in the town where there's still 12-foot debris piles that have not been removed. There are places alongside that river where the needle hasn't moved one bit. So if we had a fraction of the money that we send over to Israel, this place would have already been rebuilt. Already, we have a whole community of volunteers. This whole place is about volunteers. If I were the mayor of Asheville, I would have said, hey, let's all go out here on a couple of weekends and we could clean this thing up in no time. You can drive through I-26 or I-40 and you still see people living in tents. You still see buildings that look like somebody shot an M1, A1, Abrams, Sabo round right through the side of it. Communities are still completely messed up from the feet up and nobody seems to care. But we sure have plenty of money to give overseas to murder people, but we sure don't have any to keep us alive here.
Welcome to corporate culture. There it is. It's what corporations do, I guess. There's so many more questions I want to ask, but we've got to wrap up for hour one. Can you quickly tell folks one more time where they can reach you or find you online?
Sure. Best place is going to be permapasturesfarm.com, permapasturesfarm.com. We got a YouTube channel called Perma Pastures Farm. I got a podcast. It's probably the number one farm podcast in the world. It's called the Permaculture Pimpcast, P-I-M-P, and it stands for Permaculture is My Passion, where we teach people everything they can do to try to maintain in this world that seems to be changing by the day. So that's probably the best places. And some of the products that we sell, you can find at our website. Some of the things that we use to clean up Western North Carolina, you can obviously find that at our website as well. And I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about the Sovereign Health Summit. Our website for that should be going live, and we're going to make it as low a price point as we possibly can to get people healed with some of this healing protocol that Dr. Will, Barbara O'Neill is going to be there, Dr. Henry Ely, the guy from Cultivate Elevate. We're going to have a number of people out there that specialized in natural healing, things that we can't talk about publicly.
All right, Jason, is there anything you want to add before I close down hour one and prep up for hour two?
Well, when we get back, I'd like to know what areas were actually repaired, because I know crews were sent into certain places, and what areas were left as a total disaster zone.
Well, when we come back for hour two, I kind of want to dig a little more. Does anyone comprehend why this area was so heavily targeted? But anyhow, I'm going to wrap up hour one. Hour one is free to everybody at crow777radio.com. That is crow777radio.com. Members know to log in for the full episode, and members get exclusive access to my solar work, to the film Shoot the Moon, that now has 10 awards in the world, covering all my older telescope work. Also, the still images from my solar work are available on the website. As a member, you get full access to all the comment sections under every episode and the forum. There are many people now bringing up top-level subjects about some of the false flags that have recently occurred. I should also mention Cultivate Elevate was on one of our episodes, 581. You should go check it out. That's Matt Roski. And by the way, on the sponsors page, there's a great discount. If you click there, you get that. And people rave about his products. But he's also part of the community, like Billy Bonds, that does things, that tries to help. Anyhow, check those things out. With that, I'm going to wrap up hour one. And I want to wish you all a happy, healthy, and higher-minded new era. We'll be back quite quickly to start up hour two. There it is, man. Cheers. We'll be right back.
belief is the enemy of knowing.